And you know, there's a very, I don't eat meat or I don't eat flesh other than human flesh. And in Australia, from what I understand, there is a movement to stop the eating of cows because, you know, the cows contribute more to global warming through their farting and burping than all the cars and pollution of man-made things. So, and apparently there's a movement to eat kangaroo because they do not emit the methane when they fart or burp.
I thought kangaroos were kind of like, almost like the deer are here, you know, almost like borderline pest animal, you know?
Well, I believe there is a movement to farm them. The only problem is you need, I think, 10 kangaroo to equal one cow, but they are pollution free.
How did Australia come about? Where did this deal with Jigsaw?
I guess, you know, I honestly don't know, because I'm. But I think that the guy who owns the company, I think he's a Troma fan, and I think that, you know, I was in Australia a few years ago for a film festival, and they had big lines, and people, even though we haven't had any distribution there for a long time, there were people who were very, you know, excited. There was a retrospective a month or two ago in Amsterdam at the Film Museum. The Film Museum is they usually show Alain René, or you know, they don't show Troma movies, that type of movie, but they did. They showed 8 Troma movies, and I was there, and there was a line out into the street, and they. People fighting over seats, and they raffled off. They had to put in extra tickets, and they raffled them off. And yet, we have no distribution in Europe. We have none. And the people want to see our movies. And I think the guy who runs Jigsaw in Australia is likes our movies and thinks that if given a fair chance, if they can get a bit of a push, they will do well.
Is there an issue with getting distribution in Europe? I actually feel like Troma movies, like there'd be a good market there.
There is no distribution of Troma movies in Europe, absolutely none. And again, this cartel pretty much runs the industry worldwide. The only proof I can offer you is show me other independent movie studios in any country that have lasted a long time. You know, maybe in India? I don't know. I don't know the Indian market. I do know that there's no such thing as copyright law there. You know, we don't have much of a chance anyway. But, you know, I don't know about every country, but I can tell you that, you know, show me some independent movies. Certainly in the United States, there are no independent movie studios that have existed for anything close to 35 years. And it's not because they're making bad movies. They're making great movies. They're making movies that are better than Troma, but they cannot make a profit. They cannot feed themselves. They cannot make money off their art. Now, in most countries, the United States, I think, is the only country that doesn't subsidize its local independent industry. It does subsidize the giant devil-worshipping international media conglomerates with the tax structure and with the inbred lobbying and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, France and England and Australia and Canada and almost every country in the world gives grants and gives money to local filmmaking, not the United States. And I'm not saying necessarily that it should, but it also doesn't have an atmosphere in which the independent spirit can get a fair level playing field. It's probably the same. My guess, it looks to me, based on what little I know, it looks to me that most of the other countries are controlled by a small number of international media conglomerates based on what seems to be available. But again, I'm no expert. I can only speak from my own spot and from the fact that, you know, there's a line out the door at the Film Museum in Amsterdam, and yet we have no distribution in Europe. I mean, there's fan mail all over the world. People are paying $50 to buy a $10 DVD. They're paying $50 in shipping. so they can see movies in France. You know, they're buying off our website, you know, then paying huge amounts of shipping charges. Just, it's ridiculous. But that's how it works.
And that's certainly a way. That's certainly thanks to the internet that that's possible. I mean, that's
But think of the people. If someone's going to pay $50 just on top of $10 DVD,
I'm saying
it's pathetic.
That's
you know, how there's only one out of 100 can afford that. You know, who's gonna buy the DVD? I wouldn't. So that's why we're not that opposed to people pirating our movies. Let them pirate it. At least they get to see it. I make my movies for people to see. I've been lucky, and I've been able to make a living and send my kids to Harvard and all that kind of stuff. But I've been lucky. You know, I've just been very, very fortunate, and it's pure luck. But I think that to some extent, piracy helps the independent artist because it gets his, her, or its work into the public consciousness.
And that's what I meant with that. The internet, a lot of these people, like the people in France that you mentioned, for example. Before the internet, they wouldn't maybe not even have known that you.
Not a chance. We'd be dead. Yeah. That's why the big white boys want to get rid of the internet. They want to get rid of it. It's a danger to them because they may actually have to get up in the morning and do some thinking. They may actually have to get up in the morning and figure out how to make a movie that isn't made by a committee, that just isn't a series of non-connected three-dimensional explosions. They'll have to actually tell stories. They'll actually have to create something that makes people think. They don't want to do that. My God, what a horrible thing that would be. And how about the thousands and thousands of, at least in the California industry, suits who make $500,000 to $4 million to $10 million to $50 million a year for being yes men, for doing nothing? And how about the disgusting, obscene salaries that a small number of actors make while 99% of the world is living on a dollar a day? It's a disgusting, upside-down, Alice in Wonderland media world, and it really is a pity that that the public doesn't get what it deserves.
How many films does Troma Entertainment make every year?
Well, we only make one or two, but we distribute maybe one a month. We release one a month, mainly on home video, as you discerned. If I direct a movie, we can get it into 200 or 300 American cinemas and a few in Canada. But
so you're talking about Troma actually buys independent films?
We own a library of about 800 movies, and I think we've made about 100 of them. Or, you know, we've produced or financed or directed about 100 of those movies. But the rest have been movies that we've bought. When we had money, we bought libraries of films from movie companies that couldn't survive. So we've got a big library of movies. We have a lot of content. Unfortunately, nobody's buying it right now.
What kind of films are those? Are they in the vein of trauma films?
No, that's a good question. No, they're all different kinds. Children's films, action films, horror films, comedies, romance. We've got every kind of movie.
Are those on your website too, on the Troma
website? Yeah, most of them are. Yeah, most of them. There are probably three. If you go to the Troma store at troma.com, you get a pretty good cross-section. I don't know if we're selling everything, but I'm sure we're selling about 300 of them on DVD.
That's interesting. I didn't know that you did that either.
Very important. Sure.
What do you look for in independent film to acquire?
Another very good question. We try to find movies that are one of a kind, that are truly unique, so Cannibal the Musical, for example, is a perfect example. Nobody would distribute that movie. That movie was made by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. And right after Cannibal the Musical, they came up with something called South Park. But nobody would touch Cannibal the Musical because it was singing and dancing and a little bit of cannibalism. And, you know, there was nothing objectionable in it. It's just that it was a one-of-a-kind movie. It's a musical.
I saw that in The Village a couple of years back. I was playing at I think it was Village Cinema Theater.
Could be.
And the theater was packed. And
yeah.
The audience was laughing hysterically. In a way, it was, I mean, were the jokes tasteless? Yeah, of course they were. But you know what? Sometimes you want that. And
well,
is there
you saw it on probably a midnight show or something.
I'm sure it probably was a midnight show. We did see it in the theater. But again, there wasn't an empty seat in the place.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know.
People weren't expecting to see the movie Ordinary People. They weren't there to see Cannibal the Musical. I think people go there thinking it's going to be a Disney film. These people are too stupid to go to theaters.
Well,
so, the market is there for that sort of stuff.
Cannibal the Musical and Troma, the Toxic Avenger, Class of Nukem High, Surf Nazis Must Die, Tromeo and Juliet. These movies are very entertaining, they're very witty, and they have very interesting social themes. And the public likes them, but unfortunately, they're thrown in the ghetto of the midnight show. And indeed, whenever our movies are in a theater, now Toxic Avenger was made in 1983, and it's still theaters still call up to play the 35mm prints. And they're always it's always crowded. We have a Tromeo and Juliet. Many of our movies are like that, where they draw a crowd, and even with the no advertising after 20 or 30 years. But you don't make money with that. Guarantee you.
I think that
we didn't get any money out of that screening that Phil saw or James.
Well, that I think that's what I like about Troma films is that first of all, you're not afraid. It's totally okay to be on PC, and I love that. And they are funny, and they are witty and everything else, and they are, you know, and I think that, I mean, that's what I like about it. And I like that you have stayed consistent through all these years with the type of films that you make. You have not tried to, you know, make it into more of a Hollywood-type film. You know, I think you have stayed true to form all these years.
Well, you know, a lot of well-known people have come out of, you know, as I say, the South Park guys. We discovered them. They're quite, James Gunn, with whom I wrote Tromeo and Juliet. Tromeo and Juliet is a movie that promotes incest, among other things, and is one of our more successful films. His next career move was to write Scooby-Doo, which I believe was made in Australia. And then he's been making big-time movies himself. He did a movie for Universal called Slither, very successful. And now he's got a new production with Ellen Page and Rainn Wilson and a whole bunch of stars called Super. And Vincent D'Onofrio, who's the star of CSI, whatever that thing is, he's like supposed to be the most watched TV show. He started with Troma's The First Turn On. Oliver Stone's first movie experience was with us. He's in one of my early movies called Battle of Love's Return. There's a slew. If you go through our library, you'll see Kevin Costner's first movie is Sizzle Beach, USA. I didn't direct it, but obviously he was very much a fan of Sizzle Beach, USA, because he went back to the water not too many years later and made Sizzle Beach Part 2, otherwise known as Waterworld. Wonderful, wonderful film.
Well, how do you feel when you hear things like Peter Jackson or Quentin Tarantino, my favorite, that when they say that you have had a big influence on them?
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I hope it's true. I mean, I'm flattered that it's true, but they've also had an influence on me. You know, I look at some of Quentin Tarantino's work, and Takahashi Miike, the Japanese guy, I think has written about Citizen Toxie and how he respects it and how he feels it's a great movie. But when I was making Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead, I was very much encouraged by one of his movies, which was Happiness of the Katakuris, which has some it's got some zombie in it, and it's got some singing and dancing. And Poultrygeist is not a musical, but it has about five or six on-screen songs and some dancing. So I'm it kind of goes both ways. Some of these guys like James Gunn or Eli Roth, who made Hostel and Cabin Fever, and The guys who made Crank, they put me, some of these guys put me, give me small parts in their movies because they're trauma fans. Neville Dean Taylor did that with Crank, too.
You were in Cabin Fever, too.
No, I wasn't, actually. No. I was supposed, well, he's, I'm on the, they've got me there in the credits or on IMDb, but unfortunately I had committed to an underground movie in Texas, so I couldn't be in Eli's movie. And I was in a movie called, I can't remember the name of it, but it was very underground. And,
well,
I read that
you were in Cabin Fever, and I was like, I didn't see him in there.
No, so, I wasn't, but they got me in the credits, I think. Yeah. But I've been in a lot of those, you know, quite a number of movies. A Gamer with Gerard, whatever his name is, Butler, that's a big movie. I'm in that one briefly because those directors are big trauma fans, and clearly we have a following, and there are some of a lot of the mainstream directors that very much love trauma. But the Toxic Avenger is being remade by some major Oscar-winning producer types.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Toxic Avenger, a guy named Akiva Goldsman, who got an Oscar for A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe. He is remaking The Toxic Avenger. At least he signed to do such a thing. You know, they paid a few bucks. So it looks pretty serious. And another movie of ours called Mother's Day, which my brother wrote and directed. And it's not my brother's movie. It's really not Troma's movie. It's my brother's, but we distribute it. The license to that remake, well, actually it was remade. Brett Ratner, who is a big time director, did the X-Men and stuff like that. He has remade Mother's Day with some stars, Rebecca De Mornay and Jamie King. It's a very good remake, directed by Darren Bozeman, who recently directed Repo the Opera. Even though we don't have a pot to pee in, our movies are being remade. And we're getting calls now. People want to remake Troma's The Class of Nukem High, Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, we had an offer on that, and even Poultrygeist, an agent called up who said he had a client who wanted to do Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead the right way. I'm not sure what that, apparently I did it the wrong way, but he still wants to, he thought it was good enough to want to make remake. They haven't offered us enough money, but they, obviously we have some kind of profile, and even though we're blacklisted, people seem to feel they want to remake our movie. And in two cases, they have actually paid us some money. So it looks like, you know, Mother's Day is actually remade. The Toxic Avenger looks like it's going to be remade. They signed a deal, paid some money, and they're now about to sign a big-name director.
So we get to see them on the big screen after all.
Well, you hopefully get to see, good versions. Hopefully there'll be good remakes. Not all remakes are great, but I think in the case of Mother's Day, it's looking pretty good.
Well,
and it will call attention. The remakes will call attention to the original movies.
Yeah.
Lloyd, you guys have been around for like almost 40 years. Based on word of mouth, fan base and stuff, what do you think it is about the trauma films that have made them so popular and had such a rabid fan base?
I think that what's key to the movies that we make, and Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead is a perfect example, is they're entertaining. I mean, they're very entertaining. They give you there's a theme that I'm interested in. In the case of Poultrygeist, it's an anti-fast food theme and an anti-phony liberal limousine crowd theme. And Toxic Avenger was an environmental theme, and holy cow, somebody's really crazy to get my phone keeps ringing. I'm sorry. Some people enjoy the jalapeno peppers on their pizza. They want the spicy hot spices, and Troma is the jalapeno peppers of the cultural pizza. Class of Nukem High. Tromeo and Juliet. They all are very entertaining, and they're quite original, and they usually have some provocative themes about which people can leave the theater and have an intelligent discussion.
When you want to make a film, what do you look for? First of all, do you write the script yourself, and what do you look for? Do you look for some social statement you want to make, or the humor, is the comedy, the horror, what is it?
Usually when I direct the movie, and again, I don't make that many, and it takes me a long time. Troma produces movies for other directors. Right now we're producing a movie called Father's Day in Canada, and basically the director will have pretty much total freedom. I mean, obviously I'll give him suggestions for the script and blah, 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 but it's his movie. It's the director's event. In the case of my own movies, usually they're fueled by some theme that gets into my head. That's something that with Toxic Avenger, my wife and I used to go camping, and we noticed that everywhere we went, there was McDonald's plates and cups and stuff. Then I don't think they were biodegradable in those days, yeah, there was styrofoam, most of them are no longer around, but thanks to the internet, you do get them. I used to get a lot of newsletters, kind of underground stuff, and I remember reading about toxic waste dumps all over the world ticking away like time bombs, children in Rio de Janeiro playing with what they thought was pixie dust, running around the dumps playing with pixie dust, which turns out to be radium discarded by the hospitals. Stuff like that. And that got me thinking, well, here we are in an age, this was early 80s, at least in the Americas, people are going to gyms and eating organic food was coming, you know, a lot of that thought, a lot of that mindset about eating organic and so we were beautifying our bodies while the big blue marble of ours was being defiled. I thought that was an interesting theme for a movie, and so that kind of got my thinking going regarding Toxic Avenger. And with Poultrygeist Night of the Chicken Dead, McDonald's, the fast food joint, moved in next to our little Troma building, and we were immediately infested with possum-sized rats. And then I started to read a bit about the fast food industry, and McDonald's was not a very nice neighbor. They did some naughty things, and I started to educate myself about fast food industry, and I learned this is really a horrible, horrible blight on the world, and in every level, the animals are tortured. The carcasses and the defecation and all that stuff is all over the polluting the groundwater, and the stores are ugly. They look ugly. The food is totally horrible. It creates obese people. The workers are exploited, don't get proper health care. I mean, there's nothing good, absolutely nothing good about this industry. So that was kind of the germ of what got me doing Poultrygeist, as well as the fact that I love musicals, and there are obviously other themes in Poultrygeist, the hypocrisy of the rich Clinton so-called phony, we call them limousine liberals. That is another part of that particular movie theme, and gay rights is important, and stuff like that. So it takes me quite a while. Romeo and Juliet was it took 5 years to get the script that I felt we ought to film, and luckily for me, I don't have to have Toxic Avenger Part 5 ready for Christmas, because nobody wants our movies. That's Peter Jackson's job. He's got to get his movie ready for Christmas. I can take as long as I want for Toxic Avenger Part 5, which is what I'm working on now. The Toxic Twins. And I am taking a long time. I'm on the third writer.
Do you write them yourself?
Nope. I come up with the theme and kind of a storyline, but usually there are young people working at Troma, and I talk to them, and here's my idea, and blah, 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 and we battle a lot of ideas back and forth, and in the case of Toxic Avenger, we've been hired a scriptwriter, and that didn't work, and then I hired another one, that didn't work, and I got the third one now. The third one came through the guy who wrote History of Violence, Josh Olson, who is a great writer, and so I figured he happened to be a Troma fan, and I just got lucky and met him, thanks actually to Joe Dante, who is a great director, did Gremlins and also Piranha, the original Piranha. And so Josh Olson had a protege, and so that guy is now putting together a synopsis that we wrote at Troma, and he's writing a script off the synopsis we wrote. Hopefully it'll be okay. And then I keep working. Then after I get a first draft, I rewrite it and re-edit it, and it goes on forever.
I remember hearing a couple of years back, you wanted to do something that was a little more mainstream, but people felt that you had painted yourself in the corner doing these more outrageous films. Is that true or not?
Oh, I don't know that. What was the mainstream thing? I think everything I do. I mean, I always feel that everything. I think in a fair world, Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead would be embraced by the mainstream, but nobody knows about it, so it can't be. In fact, Neville Dean and Taylor, the guys who directed Gamer and Crank, they just told. I was just with them. That's exactly what they said. They said if it was a fair world, Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead would have been a huge, huge, huge hit. So I do believe that my movies would appeal to the mainstream, but unfortunately they're not permitted to get to the mainstream. I don't know of any project where I said I'm going to not do a... Well, actually, no. I did compromise on Toxic Avenger Part 2 and Part 3, and I regret that. I made certain compromises because of the desire to increase the audience. And that was a huge mistake, and I regret it. I cut out some of the more extreme, controversial themes, as well as some of the more explicit footage. And I regret that to this day. And the same with Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, which was a co-production between a big Japanese company and Troma. And the movie is still a good one, and Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, as I mentioned, people want to remake it. It's a fine movie, but I think it could have been a lot better.
I wanted to ask you, too, since you have been you've been an actor, you've been a director, a producer, a writer, which one of these things do you prefer? What's your favorite?
Well, I'm a film nut. I enjoy anything to do with movies, and, you know, for certain directors, I mean, the director to me is the most important part of the puzzle. So,
as a writer, I disagree with you wholeheartedly, sir.
Well, you're probably you may be right. And the writers are definitely riding the back of the bus. The writers should get more money and should definitely get a lot more noise about them and a lot more respect. But being an auteur filmmaker, for me, it's all about, and I do a lot of my own writing, but it's all about, and I wish I were a better writer, and I think my movies probably would be a lot more popular were I a better writer. But the case is, I believe in the director, and it's the director's event, and the director should be all-powerful dictator on the set, and the best writers should be directors. Preston Sturges was a writer whose movies kept getting screwed up, and he became a director and made a series of the best movies in history. And then, of course, was brought down by the Lilliputians of the movie studios. He was destroyed by the Suits, as was Buster Keaton, as were many others. But I just like anything about movies. And the reason I act in movies, for the most part, is there are a lot of young Troma fans who are making their first movie, and if I'm in it, if I have a couple of lines or a cameo or whatever, the Troma fans will go and buy their DVDs, and so they make a little, you know, it may help the filmmaker. Also, if I'm in it, the filmmaker then can then go to maybe somebody a little higher up the food chain and say, well, Lloyd Kaufman's doing this movie, and so maybe, you know, maybe some slightly known name actor will see that I'm a serious player and that I'm not going to be in a movie that's totally asinine. So maybe he, she, or it will agree to. And a lot of times I do it for free if there's no budget. And I learn a lot, by the way, because I've been steeped in the celluloid sprocket hole world. All the movies I've made are 35mm film, and I don't know much about the world of digital or video. So I've been when I go on these sets, I film behind the scenes, and I've written a bunch of books, but I film the films that I'm in behind the scenes. So if you get the DVD box set, Direct Your Own Damn Movie,
I actually have that one.
Oh, thank you. There's the you'll see there's a behind the scenes piece on Gamer, which is an $80 million movie, and I think the first mainstream movie to use the Red camera, which is a revolutionary new digital camera. And I also have behind the scenes on House Bloodbath in the House of Knives, which is a no-budget giallo tribute to the Italian giallo films made for nothing in Allentown, Pennsylvania, way, you know, by a guy who I think works at Walmart. So, and, you know, so shooting behind, you know, I got lessons on video. Each movie that I act in, I film behind the scenes, and they're quite interesting. There's usually an interesting lesson that comes out of each one of these exercises.
What would you say to someone, probably a young person, that may be interested in being an intern at Troma?
Well, the good thing about being an intern at Troma is that you will, assuming you are serious, you get a lot of education and also a lot of responsibility, and you'll have the opportunity to move up the food chain. Also, having it on your resume is not a bad thing. The bad thing is we don't pay the interns. We just don't have the money. And if film
it's
school...
Kind of an industry standard, though, for the interns. That's,
well,
not even just industry, that's across the board. Wherever you, if someone wants an intern, it's understood that it's no pay what you learn.
Yeah, so in our case,
so,
if
so
they can get on,
thing.
You know, the interns who were on, who were there, it's kind of like film school. And, you know, the film schools cost, you know, USC or NYU now is $50,000-$60,000 a year. So working for free is not so terrible if you're learning something, you know, if you're actually getting to do hands-on work. In order to work on a Troma movie, you've got to sleep on the floor and eat cheese sandwiches three times a day.
Bring your own food.
Yeah, and learn how to defecate in a paper bag. Very, very, really, it's all, every dime we have has to go up on the screen.
Anyone has any other questions?
I have one more, actually. This goes way back in Troma's history and kind of builds on what you were saying about regretting cutting out some of the more controversial bits of the Toxic Avenger sequels. I've heard rumors and conflicting rumors that you regret producing Bloodsucking Freaks.
Well, I didn't produce it. You're right. I think that's a nasty. It's of our library. Bloodsucking Freaks is really in the fullness of time. Bloodsucking Freaks, while it is a very popular movie, it's so misogynistic. I don't think that if that movie came along today, we were involved putting it back when the movie actually had come out in the early 70s, but it came out as a mild version, and it was terrible, and the distributors, I can't remember, they either went out of business or whatever, and we restored the director's cut and put it out again, and and it's the only movie I know of, maybe Clockwork Orange, where it's 30, 40, almost 40 years later. And it's more horrifying and more inappropriate today than it was 40 years ago. I mean, Bloodsucking Freaks is just very bad. It's bad stuff. But, you know, maybe I'm too old. To me, I kind of see it as evil, whereas maybe younger people can kind of just look at it as a goofy 70s misogynistic movie, but... to me, the misogyny is just too nasty, and I don't think that movie came to us today. I would vote not to take it. But I have to admit, Bloodsucking Freaks is one of our most popular movies, and I mean, I go to a lot of conventions and I see young women buying it, so it's very possible that it's, you know, I may be just taking things. I may be too politically correct, or you know.
Yeah, I actually liked it quite a bit. In addition to like Poltergeist, Toxic Avenger.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there was anything, you know, looking back in the last couple of decades, if you think of anything you did and went, oh Christ, why did I make that? And well, you already answered that question.
Well, I spent 4 years on a movie called Tales from the Crapper, which we had hired a team to make it and had to get rid of them, and then we had some Troma boys and girls try to save the film, and they decided they'd rather just get drunk and take drugs. And so Gabe Friedman, with whom I did Poultrygeist, and I, and Gabe was against it. Gabe just said, throw this thing away. This is an abortion. But I wanted to salvage Tales from the Crapper. And I went out and I got Trey Parker to be in it, and Sam Raimi, and you know, kind of friends to help us try to. James Gunn played a part, and I tried to rebuild the film and make it into something that might be worthy. And what is worthy is the documentary about the making of Tales from the Crapper. If you have a beer, Tales from the Crapper is kind of fun. But and it's got all these famous people in it. Ron Jeremy's in it. A bunch of other people. I can't remember. But Trey Parker gets his head squashed. Yeah, Ron Jeremy's great in it. Trey Parker gets his head squashed. Yeah, he's very good. He's a good guy. And he's very big in the underground film industry. The documentary about Tales from the Crapper, which is on the DVD called Thick Brown Line, that is a cautionary tale. That documentary is the it makes the getting the DVD worthwhile. And also the guy who's in the fat hunk in Lost, Jorge Garcia, the star of one of the stars of Lost television series, is the star of. Or one of the stars of Tales from the Crapper. So there are reasons to see it, but I wasted 4 years on it, as did Gabe Friedman, and I don't think Gabe Friedman ever... He was our editor. I don't think he... I think he's quite chilled by that fact.
Okay. Anybody else? Any questions?
Actually, here's a question. Since this will be on Simply Scripts and all that, how does a writer get a script in your hands?
Well, there's a lot of ways. Twitter, easy. I give information on Twitter when I'm looking for scripts. It's at Lloyd Kaufman, LLOYDKAUFMAN. People forget the two L's, or they write LYOD, but it's at Lloyd Kaufman. Or there's a Lloyd Kaufman fan site. Our fans run it, but the address is there, and Troma's fan site usually has an address to send things to. But probably the best thing is to watch my Facebook or Twitter for news of when I've got time and when I'm looking for scripts. Again, we are a small company, so we don't make a lot of movies. But, we do read, I read a lot of scripts, and right now most of my energy is going into the production of Father's Day, which I'm not directing, and then developing Toxic Avenger Part 5, The Toxic Twins, which I am directing. So I'm, really not in the what scripts am I doing next mode. But there's certainly plenty of ways to get. Probably the best thing is to follow me on Twitter in terms of what I'm doing. If you're interested in acting, or we take music from a lot of people who are breaking in, and Troma is really a great showcase for new talent, and has been for 40 years. As I mentioned, a lot of today's most famous names have they got to start somewhere, and Troma is a very good place to begin. And the Troma name on your resume is a good thing. Troma.com also, by the way. Troma has like 500,000 people that go every month to the, according to the company that tracks Troma.com has a huge following. But the ones on my personal sites, I think, are very, very active. I can motivate. It's a small, it's not a huge group. Lady Gaga's got 600 million. And a penis, but I've got the maybe 25,000 people or 30,000 people who, really, really very active and really are extremely rabid about keeping Troma going, and also idealistic about preserving independent art and net neutrality.
Well, I think we have to stop, but we think we went way over time, and I'm not sure how to end it. That our producer will just have to edit it somehow so that it will end nicely. I think you were a fantastic guest. I think it was really gracious of you to come on and talk to us, and I want to thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I apologize. I don't talk very much, and I'm very shy. And but I think
I'm not a good host because I usually
am a great host.
That's just throw questions at people, not
one
that fears. appeared this show.
You're wonderful. This was terrific. I think it's wonderful that we had such an intelligent discussion and that, you know, it wasn't just deep.
Know how it, or learn how it works in out there in the world, and that it's not just make a good movie and then all of a sudden you find yourself in Hollywood, you know?
Yep, you're absolutely right. And my next book is all about, it's called Sell Your Own Damn Movie, and I think it's going to be quite controversial because I think there's a whole new wave of to distribute that could really topple a lot of the royalty and the unfair system.